That is very much prevalent these days.
Right.
How can we just control that?
All right, first of all, if you talk about misunderstanding itself, like, what is a misunderstanding? How does it run? There's an important concept in this world.
Mm-hmm.
Everything depends upon the way you look at something. Like,
yes.
For you. Like, there are different perspectives. You look at one way, the other looks at it in the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, half empty or half full.
Yes.
Like, there are two different opinions, two different perspectives. So to say, like, you know, different opinions and different perspectives.
So pessimist people are mostly prone to misunderstanding more and more, if we are going to consider those two points.
Yeah, sometimes what happens is I don't think either side should be right and the other should be
mm-hmm.
wrong. It's misunderstanding, right?
Yes, I say, like, those people are more prone to it.
Yeah, like,
since they look at the empty part of the glass and they see the bad things always. They
yeah,
go
like,
for
you,
the bad.
They say they say it half empty.
Yes, for always bad judgments come to our minds.
Yeah, like, you know.
If I consider myself a pessimist.
Like, you mean the judgmental people?
Yes, judgmental people. Well, we all are judgy people, aren't we?
I'm not. You might be.
You're not? It's very good. I hereby congratulate you for that.
Thank you.
Well, I'm a judgy person. How could I say that?
Yeah.
I can't deny it. I judge.
But why do
those
you judge?
Those brain cells do the judging.
But why do
without
you judge?
Without me even noticing them.
Is that the human nature? Is that the innate nature in the humans?
Of course. What do you think?
Does it come out of envy?
No, never.
What's the reason? What's the root?
Judging does not come out of envy.
What's the root of it?
The root of it is our brain. Well, we have an analytical brain.
Mm-hmm.
It does the analyzing, and then based on history, and, well, if history is any indication, then it tells us a lot about how human beings are, usually
mm-hmm.
naturally. Then something happens, I say, this is the outcome of that. Then, based on these things, I would say that this thing means this way,
mm-hmm.
or that thing means that way. See? Basically, it does not come out of envy. Let's go for a little break, and then we'll be back. Thank you for listening to us and giving your ears and attention.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Oh, we're talking about misunderstanding.
Yeah, that's what, like, you prefer one way and the others prefer the other way.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, like, you look at something from this side, mm-hmm. you see it four.
Yes.
And the other person looking at it from that side, he
against.
Sees it three, yeah.
Yes.
So he sees it three from that side,
mm-hmm.
but he cannot see it from the same perspective.
You know, there's a notion that says we two can look at the same thing, but the thing we see is totally different,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
We look at a tree, but the thing that comes to your mind is totally different from what comes to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So that is human beings.
So, you know, if you talk about how to, you know, prevent this these misunderstandings,
mm-hmm.
I might say, like, you know, one of the root causes is, you know, being too quick to judge.
Yes,
reaching too quick to the result,
mm-hmm.
like, without, you know, thinking about the factors and, you know, consequences.
Well, as a judgy person, I would say, as I grew up, I learned that it's okay to judge, but you should leave the doors open for different possibilities.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, give it time.
Uh-huh.
There's a judgment in your mind.
Yeah.
There's a thing that has been misunderstood by you.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go for final decision so quickly. Just give
mm-hmm.
it time.
Right.
Maybe by time you're going to see it differently. Because sometimes that happened to me many times that once I see something, I say, maybe it's like that. Well, two more days and I go for it and I see it totally differently.
Yeah.
I say, maybe there's also some other points behind that. So I should give it time, and by time, everything is going to be more clear and vivid, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what, you know, we reach too quick to the result. We
mm-hmm.
make quick decisions.
Yes.
We judge it quickly. That's where a misunderstanding occurs. Like, so if you see someone coming out of the from a bar, Mm-hmm. You see, like, this guy's a drunkard and all.
Yeah.
You know, instead of, you know, making these quick decisions.
Yes.
You say, like, Allah knows better.
Exactly.
There's a simple way. Allah knows better. Like,
maybe he had to ask a question.
Yeah, ask something, you know. There might be... That's why there's
hadith. Yes, he accidentally been there.
You know, before judging someone, mm-hmm. like, search for 70 excuses.
Exactly. That's very true.
If we all follow these, like, these principles, mm-hmm. We wouldn't be the one who misunderstands.
Exactly. See, as I said, we all are human beings. Our brain does the analyzing, and mm-hmm. then through that analyzing, millions of judgments come out. So we see that the root is our brain,
mm-hmm.
the root of all these misunderstandings, since the brain does the analyzing thing.
Yeah.
But then also, we shouldn't jump into making decisions and conclusion very quickly. Yeah. Give it time, leave the doors open for different possibilities. Maybe but what you are conceiving out of that story is not the whole story.
Exactly. If someone's doing something mm-hmm. and the other person is misunderstanding him,
yes.
So what we can do is, like, you know, the first person, mm-hmm. he should keep his work clear.
Yes.
You know, like, it shouldn't be in a way that, you know, the other person falls in, you know, misunderstanding, and, you know, it leads him to misunderstanding.
Yes.
So the first guy should keep his work clear, and the second person, he should understand, like,
yes.
If he's misunderstanding it, like, he should clear it.
Exactly.
Like, you know, like, this is a thing you did. Like, what does it mean? Like, why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm. And he should
try
to
clear it.
Also think of the person who is on the other side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
It has happened to us a million times that we are the victim of that misunderstanding.
Yeah.
So it feels so bad. So just give people the chance to explain themselves.
But if you look
and ask questions,
yeah.
Don't just stay in a blurry situation where you do not know what is right or wrong,
right.
And then go for your conclusion.
Mm-hmm. But if you look at misunderstanding, mm-hmm. it has got two results in it, like two consequences.
Yes.
Misunderstanding can lead you to get away from your friend. Like, you misunderstood
yes.
your friend,
mm-hmm.
so it takes you away from your friend. Whereas he's in wrong in the real situation.
Yes.
You just misunderstood him. But the other consequences, you know, misunderstanding can take you closer to a wrong person.
Exactly.
You misunderstand someone to be a good person,
mm-hmm.
you go closer to him.
Exactly.
Like,
that's
two
very
opposite
true.
Consequences,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. It's very nice to notice that fact as well. It might be like two sides of a knife.
Yeah.
You know? It's very dangerous sometimes, the misunderstanding that happens to our mind and the conclusions that we make based on a moment or mm-hmm. a second. We feel like somebody is good, but they're not good.
Mm-hmm.
And after we go into a relationship, we find out that how wrong we were, then it's very late. So we should consider, as I told you at the very beginning, time is very important.
Right.
Give everything enough of time in order for things to mm-hmm. get clarified.
And that's what happens. You misunderstand mm-hmm. a diamond to be a charcoal.
Exactly.
And sometimes you misunderstand a snake to be a humble person.
Yes.
Whereas you think someone's really good, really humble and pious,
really
healthy. Not
everything
really
that glitter
he
is
turns
diamond.
Out to be a snake.
Yes.
So we need to, you know,
misunderstanding happen a
take
lot.
Take care of all these things.
Exactly. About the root of misunderstanding.
Yeah.
We said that we're human beings, we all are prone to different sorts of misunderstanding because
yeah.
we have the analyzing thing inside of us, which is so intuitive
mm-hmm.
thing. Then we talked about the consequences of misunderstanding, but now as people who are living in a real world,
mm-hmm.
I would say that what are your reaction for a time when you are being misunderstood?
Okay, my reaction, like, the two times, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, two different stages. Once I'm a victim.
Yes.
And the other stage, I'm misunderstanding someone
exactly.
else. So, And the second stage is really clear. Mm-hmm. As we mentioned all these points, I really don't, you know, I'm not too quick in judging someone.
Exactly.
So I don't really fall into the trap of misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I give time and I look deeper into the situation. But if you talk about the first one, when I become the victim of misunderstanding, mm-hmm. man, it's really bad. You know, people nowadays are too quick to judge.
Exactly.
You know, what I think is when we talk about something, you know, we really literally have to measure our words. Uh-huh. You know, if your audience doesn't understand it. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not talking about any show. Like, even when you're talking with your friends or anyone, in the streets, you're talking to someone. You know, you really have to measure your words. If they don't understand something, like, they'll literally, you know, make charges on you. You're this,
yes.
you're that. You know, just, you know, just being misunderstood. And too quick, like, you know, that's really quick.
Yes, sometimes it happens in a way that you really did not mean it.
Yeah, exactly.
It was an innocent word you
and
mentioned,
I'm like, oh,
but
bro,
it turns
what did
into...
I do, man? Like, why is this happening with me? Like, what did I do? You know, that's so bad, so...
It's so bad, yes. It's so bad. When you are the victim, you feel how sad it is.
Yeah, so please, people, don't be too quick to judge. And alhamdulillah, our audience...
Or if you judge, please just give it time.
Yeah.
Give it some time. Leave the doors open. Maybe some new possibilities are going to get clarified in front of your eyes.
Yeah, and advice to myself and then the audience. Like, you know that, you know, we sometimes misunderstand our family members, our friends,
exactly.
our brothers. Like, you might misunderstand your husband or your wife. This... Give some time and look deeper into the situation.
Yes.
Like, just look at the...
Have many possibilities in your brain.
Yeah, just...
Excuse them many times,
give some excuses because you might be getting away from your loved ones.
Exactly.
Whilst you're just being misunderstood over here. Like, you're just misunderstanding them over here. So just look into the situation.
So you're pushing your dear ones because you are understanding them in the wrong way.
Exactly. I don't know how many friends I have lost because of misunderstanding. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's very true. That's it for today's episode. I think this is all we have to speak about. This was about misunderstanding. Thank you for listening to us. It was a pleasure to be here with you. Until another session and another episode with Youth Station, I would leave you to the protection of God.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The fate of many months of intense negotiations in the Austrian capital, Vienna, to revive the 2015 Iran deal hangs in the balance. The dialogue seems to face a make-or-break moment in the coming days. A draft text of an agreement between Iran and the P4+1 group, namely Russia, China, Britain, France, and Germany, is almost complete. The diplomatic effort seems to be near a climax. But still, the very few remaining gaps in the text are keeping the whole thing in limbo. This week, Iran's top diplomat Hossein Amir Abdullahian said the parties are closer than ever to a final agreement.
The Iranian government has made it very clear that the red lines that have to be respected and not crossed include a respect for Iran's missile program, which is well within its sovereign rights, a lifting of the brutal economic sanctions that have been placed on the Iranian nation and the Iranian people, and likewise for the guarantee that the United States would not remove itself and break the deal once again.
Hossein Amir Abdullahian said that Tehran is ready for a final deal if its red lines are observed. He said a good and lasting deal can definitely emerge in Vienna if the United States acts realistically and refrains from making new and wrong demands. He made the remarks soon after a trip to Moscow, where he sat down with his counterpart Sergei Lavrov. The meeting came amid speculations that Russia's demands for written guarantees from the U.S. to ensure that Tehran-Moscow trade ties will not be affected by Western sanctions over Ukraine have complicated the Vienna talks. But the Iranian and Russian top diplomats made it clear that that is not the case. During a joint press conference with his Iranian counterpart in Moscow, Lavrov ended speculations about Russian demands regarding the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. The Russian foreign minister made it clear that Moscow has received written guarantees from Washington that Western sanctions will not prevent cooperation within the framework of the Iran deal. He noted that no illegal sanctions can stop the growth of Iran-Russia ties. The top Russian diplomat stressed that Moscow wants a quick revival of the JCPOA, and the Americans must return to the agreement and lift their illegal sanctions. The ball now seems to be in America's court if it is serious about reviving the JCPOA. Negotiators in Vienna have been trying to find a way to remove American unilateral sanctions against Iran and allow the U.S. to return to the 2015 deal. The U.S. sanctions were imposed after U.S. unilaterally withdrew from the JCPOA in 2018. U.S. President Joe Biden has acknowledged that his predecessor's pullout was wrong. But Biden's words have done little to solve America's credibility problem.
So one of the things that we have to be very concerned about is that the U.S. Unwillingness to agree that they will never leave the deal and resume coercive sanctions means that it is very likely that if another U.S. administration is elected, especially a Republican one that is more hawkish on foreign policy, and more closely aligned with Israel, that they will leave the deal and reimpose sanctions on Iran. And one must be made very well aware of the fact that the Zionist lobby in the United States is extremely powerful.
Observers believe that the United States, as the party that abandoned the deal and threw the JCPOA in tatters, is expected to do more now that the negotiations have reached this critical stage. The coming days will probably show whether Washington will take the necessary political decisions.
A major cyber attack has hit websites of different institutions in Israel. A number of websites, including the website of the Ministry of Interior and Ministry of Military Affairs, were affected. Israeli officials say the ministries of health, welfare were also targeted, as well as the Prime Minister's office. Sources have described the incident as the largest ever cyber attack carried out against Israel.
If what goes around comes around, and after all these years of attacking other people's systems, computer systems, now the Israelis are suffering their own attack.
Internet access advocacy group NetBlox said a significant disruption has been registered on multiple networks supplied by Israel's leading internet providers. There were reports of connectivity interruption across Israel. As of this hour, all the sites are back for activity.
Yeah, that's obvious. Everybody depends on computers now. The problem here is always going to be the problem with irregular warfare. How do you know who did it? Normally, what would happen in a moment like this is that Israel would immediately accuse Iran of doing it, no matter who did it. And then they would call for the United States to bomb Iran, invade Iran, overthrow the government, and so on and so forth. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And now you're seeing, I think, the limits of this cyber warfare, because it depends on political considerations.
Earlier this year, a hacker group called Moses Staff struck Israeli closed-circuit television cameras in the occupied Palestinian territories and Rafael Advanced Defense System, which is an Israeli military technology company. The group released the images that were apparently taken from CCTV cameras belonging to Rafael Advanced Defense Systems on January 28th in 2021. The group said it had hacked into the closed-circuit television cameras on the streets of the occupied Palestinian territories. Back then, it posted a message regarding the cyber attack on its website, titled, "We See With Your Eyes." In November 2021, Moses' staff announced that it had targeted a number of Israeli firms and acquired a vast trove of critical facilities maps, which included information on the location and characteristics of vital systems across the occupied territories. Moses' staff added that the data included airborne mapping surveys with 5-centimeter accuracy and 3-dimensional images of Israeli military sites and important buildings. Moses' staff further stated that the information it had was of immense significance. The group has hacked over 165 servers and 254 websites and compiled over 11 terabytes of data, including Israel Post, the Ministry of Military Affairs, files related to Gantz.
Yes, obviously, if the attack succeeded, they have stronger capabilities. That's obvious. But the bigger question is, who would it be? How are we going to deduce this from the evidence? The logical suspect would be Iran, because Iran has already suffered from numerous Israeli attacks. The Israelis even made a movie about it, a miniseries called Tehran, which is all about hacking the Iranian computer system.
The Electron Silag Company and Epsilor Company. Israel has been the source of tension in the Middle East region for decades. It has carried out numerous assassinations in different countries, including Iran. It's also responsible for actual physical attacks on Iran's nuclear sites. Iran has always stressed that Israel's crimes and attacks will not go unpunished, and the cyber field appears to be a new arena for this fight.
On Sunday, Saudi Arabia executed 81 men over terrorism-related charges. It's the largest mass execution the country has so far carried out on record. The figure exceeded the country's total death sentences it handed down last year. Of the 81 people, 73 were Saudi citizens, 7 were Yemeni, and 1 was a Syrian national. More than half of those executed were Shia Muslims, including teenagers from the Resif Qatif region. The convicts also included members of Yemen's Ansarullah movement. They were accused of having links to Daesh and Al-Qaeda terror groups, but documents verifying the charges are yet to be made public.
Look, in the past, it's been quite clear over a number of years that the kingdom is in no way averse to executing people without what under Sharia would count as due process, and in particular targeting individuals because of the beliefs they hold.
The announcement drew widespread condemnation from around the world. Rights activists say the prisoners were put to death for nonviolent acts. Advocates are also questioning the validity of the court proceedings and treatment of the inmates. They say some of the trials were held in secret and that the prisoners had been tortured. Saudi Arabia's last mass execution came on January 2, 2016, when the kingdom killed 47 prisoners, including prominent Shia cleric Sheikh Nimr Baghir al-Nimr. They, too, were given capital punishment without fair trials. The cleric's only crime was to call for democracy and rally anti-regime protests. The mass execution drew fierce criticism from the international community. Iran has called it an inhumane act that violated basic human rights principles and international law. The Iranian president has slammed Western countries' double standards as well as the silence and inaction of the self-proclaimed human rights advocates regarding the execution of innocent people. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has also slammed the Saudi execution of inmates as a heinous crime. It accused Riyadh of practicing the ugliest forms of sectarian discrimination. UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet condemned the violent act. She said war crimes may have been committed if people were beheaded following court cases that do not offer proper fair trial guarantees. Some experts believe the move to be a muscle flex by Saudi Arabia amid the Russia-Ukraine conflict that is leading to a global energy crisis and has sent the West scrambling to fight alternative sources of oil. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson's planned visit to the kingdom can indicate that the West will be forgiving of the country's crimes. As a matter of fact, human rights campaigners are accusing Johnson of trying to trade oil for blood. The same criticisms were leveled against the kingdom after the killing of Saudi dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi inside the country's consulate in the Turkish city of Istanbul. But no punishment came Saudi Arabia's way.
Well, clearly the kingdom is considered by the United States to be a very special ally. And in that regard, the priorities the Americans have in dealing with the kingdom relate to basically the massive oil reserves, which are still at Saudi Arabia's disposal. But there can be no doubt that the West and the news media generally, even though there's been some coverage of this story, is dealing with it in a very hypocritical manner.
Reports of mistreatment of prisoners in Saudi jails also abound. Without seeing proper consequences, the kingdom isn't likely to change course in the foreseeable future.
In the early hours of Sunday, massive explosions rocked the capital of Iraq's northern Kurdistan region, Erbil. A dozen ballistic missiles hit secret Mossad bases there, reportedly leaving several Israeli operatives dead. Then a statement came from Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, the IRGC. The force said it had fired powerful and precision strike missiles targeting a strategic center for conspiracy and evil acts of the Zionists. The IRGC said the attack follows Israel's recent crimes and promised that those atrocities would not go unanswered. The IRGC warned that further Israeli acts of aggression would receive a tough, decisive, and destructive response. It underlined that the security of Iranian nationals was the red line of the country's armed forces. Israel has long been blamed for a wide range of anti-Iran measures, including acts of sabotage against its nuclear facilities and the assassination of Iranian scientists. Former Israeli officials have also confirmed the regime's role in the U.S. assassination of top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani in Iraq in 2020. And just last week, two IRGC officers were killed in an Israeli airstrike on the Syrian capital, Damascus. At the time, the IRGC vowed that Israel would pay for the crime. In 2018, Israel killed a number of Iranians during an attack on an airbase near the city of Homs in western Syria. There have been a number of Iranian military advisors in Syria, as requested by the Damascus government. Iran later retaliated with a barrage of missiles targeting Israeli military positions in the occupied Golan Heights. The missile strike on Erbil could be seen in the same light. Iraq's Kurdistan regional government officials have denied the presence of Israeli bases in Erbil, but the two sides enjoy friendly ties. Back in 2014, Israel bought Kurdish oil despite opposition from the central Iraqi government and threats to take legal action. 3 years later, Israel endorsed an independence referendum carried out in the Kurdistan region. And last year, Erbil hosted a conference on normalization of ties between Iraq and Israel, prompting public outcry. The Kurdish regional government said it was not aware of the conference being organized. The IRGC says Iran's peace and security is a red line for the Iranian armed forces, and they will not allow any harm to come to the country. The IRGC says Iran's peace and security is a red line for Iranian armed forces, and they will not allow any harm to come to the country.
Iran's retaliatory strike against an informal Israeli base in Iraq, which was in response to an act of Israeli aggression in Syria, which resulted in the deaths of two members of Iran's Revolutionary Guards, serves as another stark reminder to Israel's ruling elite, namely that Iran has the intent and the capability to effectively respond to acts of Israeli aggression, either against Iran directly, or against Iranian interests in the Middle East, or against Iran's allies in the Middle East, such as Syria. And I am of the opinion that the Iranian retaliatory strike against the unofficial Israeli base in Iraq will not be lost on the Israeli ruling elite.
Syria and the Israeli regime are technically at war due to the latter's 1967 occupation of the Arab country's Golan Heights. The Israeli regime maintains a significant military presence in the territory, which it uses as a launchpad for its attacks on the Syrian soil. Israel has attacked Syria repeatedly through the past years. The reasons it provides fall short of being enough to justify the death and destruction that it has caused. Tel Aviv has been a key supporter of terrorist groups fighting to topple the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad since March 2011. The regime has also been providing safe passage and medical treatment to the Takfiri terrorists who flee the Allies' defensive operations. Israel's recent attack on the Syrian capital led to the martyrdom of two Iranian military advisors with the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. The elite military force has been providing Syria with military advisory assistance in the face of foreign-sponsored militancy.
Iran has developed a very strong and a very robust armed forces which can meet Israeli aggression. Nonetheless, the Israelis, because of the unconditional support they receive year on year from Washington, will continue to act in the most criminal way possible.
Israel violates international law as well as international humanitarian law and refuses to implement dozens of resolutions or abide by recommendations put forward by relevant United Nations committees. Isn't it time the UN or other world countries gave this the attention that it deserves before the situation spirals out of control?
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the televised speech delivered on March 1st, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Mab'ath. One thing about Ba'athah is that it achieved something that seemed impossible. This prophetic experience can be repeated throughout history. This experience happened to the Iranian nation. We were really in the middle of the arena, and we were aware of the development. If any of us had been told that such a thing was possible, we would not have believed it. But it happened. The revolution liberated the Iranian nation from lethargy, and it set the people to motion. Not only did the revolution show its greatness to the world, but it also rendered the Iranian nation great and made the world see the greatness of Islamic Iran. This is the first point. If we move in the line of Ba'athah, we will make impossibilities possible, and we will be able to attain goals that seem unattainable. The next point about the Holy Prophet's Ba'athah, greetings be upon him and his household, is that there are some people who believe that religion is separate from politics.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
They consider religion as completely separate from life, politics and government. There are many individuals who work to that end. There were such individuals in the past as well. But their efforts were contracted with the revolutionary movement. In the present time, however, one sees that some people have resumed whispering such ideas with their words and writings. Contrary to the opinion of such people, the peak of the prophetic movement was establishment of government. It was the Holy Prophet himself who laid the groundwork for that. He spoke with the chiefs of Medina who had heard about Islam and who had come to see what it was about. He reached an agreement with them and the great personalities of Yathrib. At that time, Medina was called Yathrib. Prepared the ground for that. Then the Holy Prophet began his astonishing migration to that city, followed by other Muslims. Little by little, the immigrants arrived in that city. Before the migration, the Holy Prophet sent an emissary to Yathrib.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done.
in the limelight.
The nonprofit environmental working group, EWG, estimates that drinking water for more than 170 million Americans in all 50 states contains radioactive elements at levels that may increase the risk of cancer. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Lynn Peoples, journalist. This article is published under the heading Radioactive Contamination is Creeping into Drinking Water Around the U.S. Stay tuned for more. When Jenny Knack moved to Simi Valley, California in 2018, she had no idea that her family's new home was within 5 miles of a former nuclear and rocket testing lab, perched atop a plateau and rife with contamination. Radioactive cesium-137, strontium-90, plutonium-239, and tritium, along with a mix of other toxic chemicals and heavy metals, are known to have been released at the industrial site through various spills, leaks, and the use of open-air burn pits and a partial nuclear meltdown. Once Knack learned about the Santa Susana Field Lab and the unusual number of childhood cancer cases in the surrounding community, she couldn't ignore it. Her family now only drinks water from a 5-gallon, 19-liter jug delivered by Sparklets Water Service. In August, she began sending her 6-year-old daughter to kindergarten with 2 bottles of the water and instructions to not refill them at school, which is connected to the same Golden State Water Company that serves her home. A federal report in 2007 acknowledged that 2 wells sourced by the water company were at risk of contamination from the site. The EPA has said, "We are at risk," says Knack. And Golden State, she says, has at times used possibly a very hefty portion of that well water. To date, radioactivity above the natural level has not been detected in Golden State water. All water contains some level of radiation. The amount and type can vary significantly. Production of nuclear weapons and energy from material is one potential source. Mining for uranium is another. Radioactive elements can be introduced into water via medical treatments, including radioactive iodine used to treat thyroid disorders. And it can be unearthed during oil and gas drilling, or any industrial activities that involve cracking into bedrock, where radioactive elements naturally exist. What's more, because of their natural presence, these elements can occasionally seep into aquifers even without being provoked. The nonprofit environmental working group, EWG, estimates that drinking water for more than 170 million Americans in all 50 states contains radioactive elements at levels that may increase the risk of cancer. In their analysis of public water system data collected between 2010 and 2015, EWG focused on 6 radioactive contaminants, including radium, radon, and uranium. They found that California has more residents affected by radiation in their drinking water than anywhere else in the U.S., yet the state is far from alone. About 80% of Texans are served by water utilities reporting detectable levels of radium. And concerns have echoed across the U.S., from abandoned uranium mines on Navajo Nation lands to lingering nuclear waste from the Manhattan Project in Missouri to contaminants leaching from phosphate mines in Florida. While ingesting radioactive elements through drinking contaminated water is not the only route of human exposure, it is a major risk pathway, says Daniel Hirsch, a retired University of California Santa Cruz professor who has studied the Santa Susana Field lab contamination. One thing you don't want to do is to mix radioactivity with water. It's an easy mechanism to get it inside people, he says. When you drink water, you think you exert it. But body is made to extract things from what you ingest, he said. Strontium-90, for example, is among elements that mimic calcium, so the body is apt to concentrate the contaminant in bones, raising the risk of leukemia. Pregnant women and young kids are especially vulnerable because greater amounts of radiation are deposited in rapidly growing tissue and bones. This is why pregnant women are never X-rayed, says Catherine Thomason, an independent environmental policy consultant based in Portland, Oregon. CCM can deposit in pancreas, heart, and other tissues, she notes. There, it may continue to emit radioactivity over time, causing disease and damage. Scientists believe that no amount of radiation is safe. At high levels, the radiation produced by radioactive elements can trigger birth defects, impair development, and cause cancer in almost any part of the body. An early life exposure means a long period of time for damage to develop. Health advocates express concern that the U.S. government is not doing enough to protect the public from these and other risks associated with exposure to radioactive contamination in drinking water. The legal limits set by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, for several types of radioactive elements in community water systems have not been updated since 1976. Further, many elements are regulated as a group rather than individually, such as radium-226 plus radium-228. And water system operates, if they are required to monitor for radioactive elements, only need to do so infrequently, say every 6 or 9 years for certain contaminants. Meanwhile, private wells generally remain unregulated with regard to the elements, which is particularly concerning because some nuclear power plants are located in rural areas where people depend on private wells. More than one out of every 10 Americans use private wells or tiny water systems that serve fewer than 15 residences. The Santa Susana Field Lab was rural when it was first put to use about 70 years ago. Today, more than 700,000 people live within 10 miles, that is 16 kilometers. Recent wildfires have exacerbated these residents' concerns. The 2018 Woosley Fire started on the property and burned 80% of its 2,850 acres. Over the following 3 months, the levels of chemical and radioactive contamination running off the site exceeded state safety standards 57 times. Hirsch highlighted several potential avenues for drinking water contamination related to nuclear weapons or energy development. Wind can send contamination off-site and deposit it into the soil, for example. Gravity can carry contaminants downhill, and rains can carry contamination via streams and rivers to infiltrate groundwater aquifers. While vegetation absorbs radioactive and chemical contaminants from the soil in which it grows, those pollutants are readily released into the environment during a fire.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
It's now official. Russia's English language state broadcaster RT stripped of its broadcasting license in the UK.
The decision was made by media regulator Ofcom that said it does not consider RT, with studios in the building behind me, fit and proper to hold a UK license, and that it cannot be satisfied that RT can be a responsible broadcaster.
To some, the move that followed weeks of rising tensions between Russia and the West over the Ukraine crisis was long overdue. To others, censorship, pure and simple. Journalist Afshin Watansi is the host of the broadcaster's flagship program, Going Underground.
We've been in this situation together when they banned Press TV, Iran's program. I worked for Press TV. They banned that. They banned CGTN, the Chinese television company. Now they're banning RT. It just shows how much Britain is on the wrong side of history. It is the end of press freedom, the end, completely, to me, it seems, like, of informed consent, as in democracy. You can't have democracy without informed consent, and the British people can no longer watch programs that dissent from the prevailing narrative fed to us by the BBC and others.
The decision has also called into question Ofcom's independence. RT Deputy Editor-in-Chief Anna Belkina accused the regulator of being nothing more than a tool of the government.
I don't like censorship of any kind. I very much believe in freedom of speech. With freedom of speech comes responsibility, which is why we have Ofcom as a regulator. But if Ofcom is going to become an extension of the government, peddling out that particular government style of propaganda, we are indeed entering into very dangerous territory.
As RT falls victim to unmitigated hostility towards Russia over Ukraine, media consumers here in the UK lose an important source that's brought them the other side of so many stories for so many years. Saeed Pereza, London.
The outrage was palpable at today's protest. A Freedom of Information request revealed this week that racism was a factor in the Metropolitan Police's horrific strip search of a schoolgirl known as Child Q in 2020. She was forced to bend over for two female police officers to look at her private parts. No other trusted adult was present and her parents weren't informed. The Met officers are now under investigation. Some assert that the strip search of Child Q was an isolated incident, a crime perpetrated by a few bad apples. But members of the community disagree.
I think this feels a systematic approach that the police use. They may now regret using it in this particular instance. They may say that. How people could conceptualise strip searching a girl in school without her mum knowing about it, without an adult present, it's just heartbreaking.
Child Q has launched legal proceedings against the Metropolitan Police and her school. Many prominent figures have offered their support. The school called the police on Child Q, saying she smelt of marijuana. The strip search yielded no evidence of her being in possession of drugs.
They're out here in the streets, in our schools, to defend their interests. They're out here to discipline us, to create and sow and violently enforce the divisions that the ruling class needs in order to rule us and oppress us.
Now black families are torn on how to safeguard their children, to make them aware of the dangers without terrifying them of going to school.
I had to take my children out of a previous school because the black children are being treated different than the white children in schools in London, in England. And that needs to stop. I have girls a similar age to this woman, to this young woman that's happened to, and I'm so emotional about it. that I can't even speak about it. I used to work with children in homes, looked after children, and sometimes the children would complain that they were abused in the station. They ain't got no trust for the police, they ain't got no trust for society, for social care, they ain't got no trust anymore.
Horrified but not surprised, that was the reaction of many here today. In the past 5 years, more than 172,000 strip searches have been conducted in London. And the statistics show black people are 3 times more likely to be targeted. There were mothers, aunties and educators at today's protest, vowing to protect their youth. But with police being called into schools and parents alerted after the fact, how can they? Bianca Rahimi, London.
From Kurdish horses to Kurdish music and dance, this festival is all about showcasing the traditions of Iran's province of Kurdistan in celebrating the Persian New Year known as Nowruz.
I wish you a happy Nowruz. I hope that the New Year will be treating you well and the COVID pandemic will be over.
I welcome all of my fellow Iranian citizens who have come to visit Sanandaj. I wish them health and wealth in the New Year.
The ceremony also saw Iranians coming from other provinces, both to get acquainted with the Kurdish culture and to showcase their own customs in celebrating Nowruz.
We've come from Sistan and Balochistan province. I'm so glad to see all Iranian ethnicities have happily gathered here to celebrate Nowruz.
I congratulate you on Nowruz. I'm from Khorasan province and today I watched the Kurdish dance and it was amazing.
Nowruz marks the beginning of spring in the Northern Hemisphere, which falls on March 21st. The ancient tradition is celebrated by some 300 million people in Iran, Tajikistan, and Afghanistan, among other countries. That's why this event has also hosted activists from other countries.
I congratulate the arrival of Nowruz to all nations that celebrate this occasion. We in Tajikistan also mark Nowruz magnificently, as it's a time for peace and friendship. I thank the UNESCO for organizing this event.
There is so much beauty in the way Iranians celebrate Nowruz. Each city has different traditions in marking Nowruz, and that is exciting. We in Afghanistan do share some of the traditions here.
Unlike Iran, in Afghanistan we don't have the haft-sin spread, but we do have haft-miveh, which is a spread with 7 different fruits prepared on the turn of the year. I think we're here to celebrate these differences as they make Nowruz a diverse festivity.
Initiated by the UNESCO's Tehran office, the ceremony came as part of the caravan of Nowruz, which set out from the city of Hamadan, stopped in Kermanshah, and wrapped up in Kurdistan, bringing together representatives from each Iranian province to showcase their Nowruz traditions.
Their return to British soil, like their period of incarceration, a media event of the highest order. British Iranians Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe and Anousheh Shouri touched down at Bryce Norton Air Base in the early hours of Thursday morning. Both had been jailed on espionage charges in Iran. Their release comes after months of delicate negotiations and culminated in their freedom, according to a statement from Iran's foreign ministry, on the basis of Islamic leniency and humanitarian considerations. In what has become a media firestorm, much has been made of Britain's repayment of a historic debt to the Islamic Republic.
The Islamic Republic has consistently rejected any links between London's repayment of a decades-old debt and the release of the British Iranian nationals, despite attempts in Western mainstream media reporting to conflate the two issues.
We received the money a few days ago. But simultaneously, the judicial process for the release of these two persons was going on. Maybe chronologically, their release and the deposit of the money were close, but there is no connection between these two issues.
UK Foreign Secretary Liz Truss had previously